Hey, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of the Equalizer podcast. I'm your host today, Becky Morgan, and I'm here with Equalizer editor and founder Jeff Kasouf. Jeff, how are you doing?
Doing well. Happy to be here. Another busy week, very busy week. World Cup is very, I very personally feel the imminent nature of the World Cup right now, as many others probably do.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think we're halfway through the NWSL season and the World Cup is just looming ahead of everything. So that's going to really change how teams perform and what they're going to look like in, you know, just the next couple of weeks. So we are going to talk about some of the NWSL results and where teams are in the standings. And there's been a lot of attention to the teams on the top. So we are going to focus on the teams that are out of playoff contention and are sitting more at the bottom of the table right now. And I think we're going to have some conversations about how maybe they can pull their way out of being at the bottom of the table. Because as you said, the World Cup is looming. There's going to be a lot of personnel changes. Is there room for some teams that might seem out of it to like really make a push into playoff contention? We'll have to see, but let's start a bit talking about Angel City. So Angel City has not had a great year on the pitch, and they're currently sitting in 11th place just above the Kansas City Current, but both teams are tied for last place with 9 points. They played a Monday game against the Chicago Red Stars, and it really wasn't an awesome performance. They lost 2-1 to Chicago. And Chicago actually managed to pull themselves out of left place and jump both the Current and Angel City as a result of this match. You know, it's one of those games where statistically Angel City should have had an upper hand in this game. They overdoubled Chicago's expected goals. They had 15 shots to Chicago's 6. They had 60% of possession, better passing accuracy, all this, and they couldn't pull out a win. And the thing that really struck out to me is that particularly in the second half, they just looked pretty uninspired. At times, they didn't have the energy to like really make it seem like they were threatening until Sydney Leroux came on and got the goal. And then they really snapped into place. And, you know, suddenly you're like, where has this energy been all game? Because they came so close to getting an equalizer, but they just flat run out of time. So, Jeff, what have you seen from Angel City recently? And what do you think about their performance and what it might mean for them and where they are right now?
Yeah, I would say not even just recently, right? I think it stretches back into last year, even to, you know, really what was their expansion season, the beginning of the club in terms of consistency. And I think that's consistency game to game, but it's also consistency within games. And you heard LaRue address that post game after that loss to Chicago that, you know, she felt disappointed in the lack of energy, of urgency, of fight even that, you know, existed, but that wasn't there really in the beginning of that match. And we've seen that, you know, as you know, we saw that the Louisville game this season jumps out in terms of going down 2-0 early.
Sure.
You know, the in terms of bad losses, you know, and I qualify those as, you know, if you're Angel City, you're the highest profile team in the league, bar none. You know, you are a team that's doing a lot off the field, obviously looking for that success on the field. You know, you have to be winning some of these games, and a game like this, with all due respect to Chicago, let's not get that confused in any capacity. That is a winnable game at home to be, you know, at the time of the start of the game, game in hand or not, last place team, to be playing them at home in a place that, you know, leads the league in attendance. I've been there personally recently. It should be and is a hard place to play because
absolutely,
the fan environment is significant. They're right on top of you. It's unlike really anything in the league. I'd probably even say that in the sense, I mean, I've been to Portland plenty of times. I think current day in 2023, it's the hardest place to play in the league from a, let me correct myself. Actually, it's not the hardest place to play in the league because of the lack of Angel City's ability to defend that. But in terms of the environment itself, it's the best environment in the league. That's the better way to put it. So, you know, in that sense, you have to win this game against Chicago. You have to. You're struggling. You've been inconsistent game to game. You're at home. You know, you've got enough of your starters in there. I know that, you know, there was some consternation about, you know, midweek and what did that look like and who was actually in the game and who was rested. And, you know, but this is a winnable game, period. And as was that Louisville game this season. And the one that comes to mind, and I said this elsewhere, is that Louisville game last season where, you know, I think last year there was that pass of, okay, this is an expansion team. If San Diego didn't exist as a team that sat at the top of the table for half the year as an expansion team and LA came in alone, we'd look at them, Angel City, and say, this is the best expansion season that's ever been. So, absolutely. Hey, but you know, they didn't necessarily have that luxury because of their neighbors to the south. And that pass of an expansion season is gone. Whereas, you know, I remember that game, you know, home in LA against Louisville last year where they're chasing a playoff spot and they come out flat, they lose that. And, you know, there's an argument there among many other points dropped that cost them a playoff spot. Right. So to be in year two and, you know, be at this point where you drop that result, you fall to joint bottom of the table with a Kansas City team that we also don't expect to be there. And, you know, I think that obviously is not good enough. And it just speaks to the inconsistencies. I think Frey Coombe has spoken about this in some capacity, either directly or indirectly throughout the season, that, you know, you've got the late equalizer by Bella Bixby in Portland. Right. And I mean, that's, you know, call it a freak thing, but you know, it's another blown lead. It's multiple blown leads, right?
There's a pattern there.
There's a pattern, yeah. And you've got midweek last week, Challenge Cup or not, you know, it's another drop in points and stoppage time in Portland again. You know, there's a consistent pattern. And, you know, it's very much cost them points. It cost them a playoff spot last year and right now has them in joint bottom of the league.
So the thing that's interesting to me is, as you know, and probably most listeners know, I'm essentially a Louisville beat writer. I'm local to Louisville, so I see them much more closely. And Angel City seems to kind of be in a similar sophomore slump to Racing last year, where they just didn't seem to really know who they were in terms of games that weren't going their way. They just seemed kind of unmoored and lost, and the energy wasn't there, and Racing went through a 13-game winless streak where they got a bunch of really gutsy draws, but they just could not get over the line. And I just don't think that they knew who they were and what they were supposed to be. And then that's really changed for Louisville this year. Is Louisville blowing it up? No. But you can look at that team, you know, also in the bottom half, but you can look at Racing and say, they know who they are and they know what they're supposed to be. Whether they execute it perfectly is another story, but they seem much more concrete in their identity. And Angel City has such a strong identity of who they are as a, I don't want to say as a business, but you know,
as a brand.
Yes. They have a very strong brand identity, but they have not been able to create a very strong soccer identity. And I think that's hurting them right now. And I don't think that that's a huge failure. I think that, you know, this is a very young team. They're an expansion team. They are figuring themselves out. You know, there has been some turnover. Maybe, you know, they're having some issues with roster building, but, you know, they are, again, an extremely young team that managed to be very successful in the history of expansion teams, as you said, last season. So I'm curious your thoughts on that idea of brand identity versus soccer identity and what Angel City should, like, what do you think their identity is on the pitch? And can you even answer that?
I don't know. Look, I do think that, I mean, I've spoken a lot about the dichotomy there. I mean, the brand obviously is, and I think it's worth noting too, because I think this conversation has played out in the wonderful world that is Twitter a little bit. And, this goes for this conversation, but anything really, right? Like, certainly as this sport grows, like, we've got to be accepting of the fact that things can be good, bad, all of the above, all at the same time, right? Sure. They're not mutually exclusive. Sure. So, you know, I saw some of this online this week where, like, we can both say that this is an exceptional business and a team that struggles on the field, and they don't, you know, those things can coexist, and we can scrutinize one while praising the other. Right. And, you know, and they're not permanent status either. Right. I mean, eventually with anything in sports, I mean, these things change for the better or worse. So, you know, I think that they've been so successful off the field. They are in, you know, again, a huge market, you know, second biggest media market, obviously, in the country. They are, even though there is a team in the New York area for the NWSL, that Angel City is clearly the most high profile team in the league and organization in the league. And that invites a certain amount of pressure. You know, again, it's year two. I think that's understandable to a degree. I think the criticism would probably be that we haven't necessarily seen a huge improvement from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we can acknowledge, you know, Kristen Press is still on the SEI. Mm-hmm. That is not something that anybody planned for when she was the team's first signing or even at the beginning of last year. Cindy LaRue just came back on Monday. That was a very good and welcome sight and story. She scores a few minutes into her return from nearly a year off due to injury. You know, again, she was brought in to replace Press, only played a couple games, and then, you know, went on the injury shelf herself. So, you know, the Sarah Gordon preseason injury, I'm not sure they knew that they weren't getting Julie Ertz for all of 2022 when they initially traded for her. So, you know, all of these things, right? Sure. But there's a certain amount of pressure that's invited. There's a certain amount of needing to figure that out, you know, within those challenges, because frankly, those challenges in unique ways exist on every team in the league and the world, you know, and you have to navigate those. So I don't know that I necessarily have the answer to what is the identity on the field. No, because I think that, you know, I think that Ertz, her arrival in theory answered some of the questions that we've talked about on this pod and on the site about some of the bite in midfield. You know, I think that there's talent there defensively. I'm a big Sarah Gordon fan. Allie Riley's obviously done a lot in her pro career. I think they've struggled defensively to a degree. And, you know, are there bright spots? Obviously. I mean, I think Alyssa Thompson is already a very good player in this league, regardless of being 18, never mind the fact that she looks like, you know, the future of the league, potentially mm-hmm. the national team. So I think there are pieces there. In terms of a cohesive package, what does it look like? Is, you know, is this a team that wants to build out of the back? Is it a team that wants to high press and counter? Is it a team that wants to, you know, I don't know. Maybe it wants to do some of these things. I think to speaking to that inconsistency we spoke about, I'm not sure that, you know, we know what it is based on the actual product we've seen on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis.
I mean, what you said, the cohesion of the roster, I think that's a big question, and you're absolutely right. I mean, they have some incredible players. They have, and that, yes, they've definitely struggled with injury and had some horrible luck with injuries, but, you know, are they building a roster that is collectively cohesive? Like the signing of Henri, you know, one incredibly strong player historically, but coming off injury, is very easily comparable to Julie Ertz, but they're both now going to be gone for the World Cup. So, like, what are you really getting from Henri, unless if you're assuming that Ertz isn't going to be here next year? And also, I mean, signing Henri for 3 years plus, as a 34-year-old, I believe she is an interesting choice. I think that's fairly surprising. But at the same time, you know, they have youth like Thompson. I mean, Press has just had this horrible injury, but she has been one of the most consistently strong players, you know, in women's soccer. So they have these great players, but it's just not all coming together. And I think it's interesting that it's so similar to Kansas City. I would say that both of them have two of the most successful brands. I mean, definitely of new teams. You know, Kansas City has marketed themselves so well. They've invested in the training center. They have the stadium that you hear about, like, every week. There's new renderings that they're releasing, and, you know, it's all very wow and exciting. And then they went and got Dabinia, and then they made this huge trade to get Michelle Cooper, and they didn't build up their defense, and then that's been absolutely eating them alive. So you, again, question their roster building. Were they making splash signings versus their smartest signings. And so, and the fact that they're now both at the bottom of the table, and that might change, but, you know, Kansas City has also had serious injuries. They signed Morgan Gautreau, who has not played at all, even though I think there has been some word that she is going to start being available soon. And luckily they just had Kristen Hamilton return, and she made an immediate impact and scored the goal that won the game against North Carolina. So I think it's interesting that both these teams have had kind of this questionable roster cohesion, and they're both at the bottom now, and they've both had struggles. And I think everybody, well, not everybody, but many people assumed both these teams would be performing at a much higher level just based on the pieces they had. So I don't know if there's a direct question out of this, but I mean, what does this say to you about how they're having kind of similar issues in my mind, and they're both in similar places?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are parallels, right? That there was a lot of hype around Kansas City's roster build. I'm very excited about their stadium as well. I mean, their training facility shouldn't be overlooked. I think that's a key piece that even, you know, some of these other teams, we just talked about Angel City, San Diego, Spirit. I mean, a lot of teams are still trying to figure out, even as they find success in other areas, even other, you know, business areas. So, I mean, obviously the infrastructure and investment there in Kansas City is huge. You know, I think you can find in parallel, certainly defensive struggles. You know, I think that maybe injuries to a degree as well, bring in Gautreau, DiBernardo was not ready to go right away. You know, I think those were two, you know, low key exciting signings if you're Kansas City, because, you know, they would have been big signings in themselves without the Dabinia addition. And I think maybe they just got overshadowed by Dabinia. But, you know, I think you look at defensively, Kansas City has not been good. We've seen the rotation of keepers, obviously. You know, so I think there's parallels there. I think you can also look at both teams and say, you know, part of that defending is what's happening in front of them in the midfield. Is that all? Are there breakdowns in midfield? And I think that's certainly the case in Kansas City, where, you know, in Kansas City's case too, there's been a lot of shifting of systems and shape to try to figure out what to do. They were really married to that three back last year. You know, as that has, mm-hmm. as they have struggled significantly defensively this year, they've played with a three and a four back and, oscillated a bit and tried to figure that out. You know, I don't think the concern there is with the wing backs. I think really from a central positioning, I mean, the absence of Elizabeth Ball this season has been difficult. You know, I think the loss of Kristen Edmonds has actually been underscored quite a bit as a free agent.
100%.
So I think those are parallels, you know, in addition to the big, you know, big stars, higher expectations. You know, I think that those are, you know, pieces where you could look at and say, I would say this, I've said this a lot, and defending in this league is at a premium, right? I think there are some very good individual talents in defending. I don't think collectively this is a league that's known for very good defending, quite frankly. And maybe part of that is having exceptional attackers, but I think we see that week in, week out, that there are some really, I'd say, bad defensive moments. Again, yeah. I think things can be good and bad at the same time, right? So,
Look at the national team too, and their struggle to really find well-developed defenders. It just seems like this is a league that doesn't develop defenders well.
And maybe, you know, I don't know if that speaks to the country's development system or the league itself,
sure.
but yeah. So, you know, I think when you look at that, the teams that have been able to defend better, let's put it that way in terms of framing it, have obviously, I mean, this is maybe it's obvious, but have found success. I mean, the Thorns obviously this year and last have found ways to just score loads of goals, you know, in large buckets, more so than other teams. But, you know, defensively, again, I mean, San Diego's joint top, right? Same as last year. They've had some hiccups this year that have been a bit surprising from a defensive organization standpoint. But just like last year, I mean, this 1-0 victory over Gotham over the weekend, you look at San Diego, and I think, you know, I was there. I mean, Gotham comes away thinking they controlled that game, probably because they were on the ball a lot more, 66% possession, I think it was, or at one point it was significantly high. And but San Diego's a team that controls matches away from the ball and knows when to strike on a counter, has the talent to do that and can defend well. Like, the teams that actually can defend have found success in a league where that doesn't exist very, very frequently.
Sure, I agree with that. I mean, speaking to another table, another team that is towards the bottom, and the one I'm most familiar with is Racing Louisville, and they have a positive goal differential for one of the first times in their history because they focused on improving their defense. And just looking at the team defensively from this year to the last 2 years, it is dramatically different with the addition of Abby Ersig and Carson Pickett have just completely changed the team's defensive profile. And even though they're not really any higher up the standings than they were, I don't think anybody can look at Racing Louisville now versus last year and not say that this is a definitively better team. Maybe a team that hasn't come together yet, but it is a better team, and they're a better team solely because of their defense. Defense is absolutely what is lifting them up. And that leads me to ask about the teams that are hovering at the top of the bottom half of the standings: North Carolina Courage, Racing Louisville, and Orlando Pride, who are in 7th, 8th, and 9th positions, respectively. All of these teams are similar in the fact, in my mind, in that they're fairly young rosters. They're leaning very heavily on young players for the most part. They're teams that just kind of maybe need to come together a little more in order to actually be successful, because right now they're just kind of halfway there. They've had some really good games. They've had some not good games. And it's been the same inconsistency that has rocked Angel City and Chicago and Kansas City. But you can still see the potential, I think, of these three teams much more fully than you necessarily can see the bottom teams. Maybe that's not completely fair, but either way.
Well, I mean, it's more pronounced inconsistency because of the bottom, you know.
But they wouldn't be higher in the standings if it wasn't more pronounced.
Right.
I mean, obviously, but they've gotten more points.
Right. But I agree with you that I do think Louisville looks like a better team. I would make the same note of, you know, and I've said this, I think that they've struggled to put together 90-minute performances at times. But, you know, in terms of your point and question, I mean, yeah, I guess inherently we're talking about teams that have not found exactly, you know, exact consistency, right? Just by where they are in the table. But I will say I've been impressed with Orlando in terms of, you know, relative to expectations, right? Sure. I mean, I think Orlando, look, there's no getting around. The Pride have shot themselves in the foot as a franchise a number of times on the field since inception in many ways. They've had a lot of start stops. They've found some success in very small pockets and had coaching changes. Skinner leaves when they're, you know, they start that season top of the table. Maybe they were wobbling a bit in the summer, but, you know, an abrupt exit. They finish that year with an interim coach. They go out, they hire Amanda Cromwell. Splashy enough kind of coaching signing, right? It's a big deal to hire away a college coach from a top university, had won a national championship there. Only barely gets started and is suspended and then ultimately fired as part of an investigation league-wide. So, I mean, obviously the 2020 Challenge Cup, not even making it to Utah, it's been start-stop there, right? So we don't have to tell anybody there that they've taken a lot of L's and a lot of flack from folks like us. So I think it's worth pointing out that, you know, again, I think maybe history, there was a history, a bias informed by history preseason there in terms of looking at the roster, maybe, you know, player for player, not as talented as a lot of teams probably. Right. And having I don't know, I guess a recency bias of sorts and, sure, and just having low expectations there. And obviously then, you know, you look at that result in Portland and it's here we go again. Right. And, yep. And I think from then, especially, they've gotten a lot better. I've been impressed with not just some results they've put together, but how they've done it, even in losing performances. I mean, that loss to Chicago, you look at that and, you know, we were just kind of hammering on Angel City for losing that, right? to Chicago. I look at the loss to Chicago that Orlando had. I mean, Alyssa Nair stands on her head. She gets help from the crossbar, the woodwork on multiple occasions. You know, you look at, I don't care about stats. Watch that game and tell me who controlled it, right? The Orlando Pride controlled that game.
Yeah.
They lose 1-0, but you look at the combinations they're actually putting together in midfield. You look at how they beat San Diego almost at their own game, right? San Diego dictates the opening half hour there. They go up. Orlando counters, gets a couple goals back. You look at this sort of 9, 10, 11 pass buildup that Orlando has on some of these goals where they're actually, you know, twice switching the field, finding the, you know, the in and then out pass, the wall pass, breaking lines of pressure. Like they're actually showing signs on a, mm-hmm. you know, relatively noticeable basis of pattern that, you know, that they can do this more regularly. And I think, you know, frankly, to somewhat of a surprising degree. So I think among that group, I'm really intrigued by Orlando. I don't know that they're a playoff team. I don't know that this year anyway. I don't know that they're going to make a run necessarily. I don't know that they'll finish above the teams we're talking about even. But I mean, the big question, as I just alluded to, is if they can keep this team together, if they can keep the staff together, if they can put this together and make it last for a season, you know, as a start, given what the history I just mentioned, I'm interested to see what happens there.
No, I'm interested to see what happens there too. And just tying back, you know, as we're getting close to ending the podcast, tying back to an earlier question, I think one thing that's really interesting about these three teams, the North Carolina Courage, Racing Louisville, and Orlando Pride, is compared to Chicago, Angel City, and Kansas City, they seem to have an identity. They seem to know who they are. Like the Pride know that they're a young, scrappy team that still has a lot to learn. Racing Louisville, I actually just spoke to Abby Ersig yesterday, and she said, you know, we know who we are. This team, she actually said, can be magnificent. They just need to have confidence and actually believe in themselves and find that. So, you know, we're like a year away from Racing really coming together, basically, she said. North Carolina, you know, like Orlando Pride and Racing Louisville have had big changes in their rosters, but they seem to know who they are. They seem to know how they're supposed to play, what their style is, who the Courage are. And I think that's very different from Chicago, who I think still thinks that they were the Chicago of years past and can't really figure out who they are as the Chicago now. We just talked about how Angel City and Kansas City have questions about what their actual soccer identity is and if they're actually playing, you know, who they are as an identity. So I think that's interesting. I think that these three teams, the Courage, Racing, and Orlando, seem just like they're not quite fully baked yet, you know, that they're still in the process of becoming who they are. And that's why they are contending more. So do you think that we are close to seeing these three teams come together? Do you think we're close to seeing them have consistency? Because what do they need to do to get out of this kind of mid part of the table and actually become winning teams? Because there just has not been consistency in results, even if we are, as you said about Orlando, starting to see consistency in, even in games that they're not winning, in what they're doing right and how they're playing.
Yeah, loaded question to try to unpack in a short amount of time. But yeah, you know, I think, I guess the brief version of team by team, you know, look, I think the midfield in Louisville is a plus. It's one to build around, right? You know, defensively, again, maybe I have some questions in individual defending moments, perhaps.
Sure.
And then, you know, Savannah DeMello has sort of been the piece of attention for Louisville, but obviously I think you want a little bit more production up front. You look at Uchenikanu, a record signing for a player coming over from Liga MX. Obviously it has the add-on fee if she meets a certain number of goals. And, you know, I think you want more from her, you know, specifically, but sure, from that forward line. Right. And I think that's, you know, potentially a fair a fair sort of criticism across the board there. I actually think, you know, defensively, I've been, again, things that have been maybe surprising, maybe better than years past. Orlando defensively, I think quietly, like Kylie Strom's been very good, and statistically so as well. If you look at some of her placement in some of the more advanced data of what she's doing. So, you know, I think that there's been, you know, some good defensive moments there, but, you know, in each case, you know, who are the goal scorers there? And I think that might be most pronounced, as we've talked about on this pod, for North Carolina, when mm-hmm. you lose literally over half your goal scoring production from last year in two player losses, which were two major player losses in Dabinia and Diana Ordonez. We now have a legitimate rumor that, you know, a rumor that has some legs to it of interest in Carolyn for, you know, from European sides. What does that mean? Whether that's short or somewhat longer term, what does that mean? So, you know, I think if I'm North Carolina, I'm wondering, what are my answers in the number nine position specifically? What am I, you know, who am I turning to score in these moments? Because I think she is an answer, obviously, but, you know, is she a long-term answer? So I think that, you know, you can look at these forward lines. If I'm, again, trying to sort of tackle a big topic quickly, I think that those are areas of improvement, you know, that could exist, mostly across the board. We've talked about the defensive side a little bit earlier.
And then just last question, because we addressed the top teams in the bottom half, it's awkward to say, what do the three teams at the very bottom, what do you think are the key things they need to get together now before we face the World Cup, before they lose some major players, in order to make sure that the top half doesn't pull away from them and they get kind of mired in the basement?
Yeah, I mean, to not be repetitive, I mean, I think you can look at, again, winnable games. I mean, you look at, you know, we had Kansas City versus Chicago recently when they were both sitting at the bottom, right? We had Angel City, Chicago that we just talked about, where that was, we talk about, like, we don't have promotion relegation, but these would be, you know, relegation six pointers in another league, right? So mm-hmm. there's a lot of these kind of, you know, you would look at, the danger is that, you know, anybody will tell you this and it's cliche, but it's also true that every game in this league is relatively competitive. And, you know, most of these are six pointers for everybody, right? But if you're looking at this weekend, you've got Chicago, North Carolina, that is critically important in terms of winning games from taking points off of teams that are around you, right? And I think you've got to look at that and, you know, you look at that and maybe I'm not going deep into some of the things that we've already talked about for that exact reason, in terms of like specific personnel and lines of play. But I think you have to be able to win those games in this league. And you're not going to, by the nature of the parity and the competitive nature of it, you're not going to win every one of them. You're not going to take points in every one of them. But, you know, to the point of what we said about Angel City at home there, like you've got to find a way to pull out some results in these type of games. So those are the ones that I look at. I mean, I've written about this a little bit. Some of these teams have stretches where, you know, of course the standings change, but they've got stretches where for a month or more, they're only playing teams in the bottom half of the table right now, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a stretch like that and you can pretty much guarantee that, you know, a game against Portland in September or October, you're probably looking at a team chasing the shield in reality. You need to win these games right now, right? So mm-hmm. that to me is something that jumps out when you look at, you know, what's on tap another week out, and you've got, you know, you've got North Carolina, Orlando, right? I mean, there's a game like this pretty much on a weekly basis. After that, North Carolina has Racing Louisville. Like, North Carolina itself is a team in this position right now. I mean, they've got a run of Chicago, followed by Orlando, followed by Louisville, followed by Houston. I mean, this is, you know, you need to pick up points in those games. And that is kind of the best general way to answer that.
Well, this has all been very interesting, but that is all the time we do have for today. So, Jeff, thank you so much for joining me. I always appreciate your insight. I'd like to extend thanks to our editor, Jacqueline Purdy, and we will see you next time.
Thank you.